IWS, Impulsgeber für den Mittelstand. Drei Fragen, drei Minuten zwischen Wirtschaft und Politik.
Setting impulses for a performant economy. Welcome to the podcast of the IWS Internationaler Wirtschaftssenat.
Hello, I'm international TV host and journalist Ali Aslan. And in the second episode of the IWS podcast, we'll talk about the United States. And in particular, we'll look at the current political landscape and zoom in on the Biden presidency. I couldn't have asked for two better speakers to tell us what is going on in the US right now as far as politics is concerned. We have with us former Democratic US Senator from California, Barbara Boxer. Senator Boxer served in US Congress for 34 years, including 10 years in the House of Representatives and 24 years in the Senate. Currently, she's the co-chair at Mercury, a leading global bipartisan public strategy firm. Delighted to welcome James Ziegler. He's a senior counsel at Van Ness Feltman, a leading national law firm. James has over 50 years of experience in law, finance, management, and public policy, and has served, among others, as Sergeant at Arms of the US Senate and as Commissioner of the Immigration and Naturalization Service. Senator Boxer and James Ziegler, wonderful to have you with us. President Joe Biden laid out an ambitious agenda for his first 100 days in office, promising swift action on everything from climate change to the coronavirus pandemic. Senator Barbara Boxer, it is tradition to rate the performance of a president after the first 100 days. We're only halfway in, but 50 days in, how would you evaluate President Biden's performance? Someone who know very well, obviously, throughout your mutual time in the U.S. Senate. Where does he stand on key campaign pledges?
So far, so good for Joe Biden. I mean, his whole focus when he ran was the coronavirus, getting his arms around it. And his focus was stimulating this economy. So the first bill that he was able to get through was very difficult, dealt with both those things. He invited the Republicans in. They said they wanted to cut the plan, the American Rescue Plan, by two-thirds. That's like saying if a doctor gives you three pills a day, you only take one, you're not going to beat that cancer that way. So I think he is doing well. His promise of bipartisanship, I don't feel you can say he's not on course. The people of this country supported his bill by 70%. That included a lot of Republicans. So I think he's off to a good start. Lots and lots of problems remain. But if I'm Joe Biden right now, I'm feeling pretty good.
Lots of problems remain, and some we will discuss, of course, throughout this podcast. But James, I also want to give you the opportunity to comment on Joe Biden's first 50 days in office.
Thanks for having me today. I agree with the senator that he got off to a good start getting the American Relief Bill through, Rescue Bill through. It was, as we know, by just a small amount, but a small amount worked. They had to use a particular mechanism in the Senate to get it passed called reconciliation, but that would have been the only way to get it done. That was a positive for him. It's probably going to have some negatives long term, but those aren't out there yet. He's had some difficulties though, I think. In particular, this migrant surge that we're having at the southern border. As I mentioned when we did that Zoom call a few weeks ago, that I was concerned that he was trying to do too many things at once and responding too much to Donald Trump's actions. And I do think this is a problem that is somewhat of his own making or his administration's making. I would have counseled them, having been INS commissioner at one point, having dealt with some of these problems, I would have counseled them to go a little more slowly and be a little less out front about how much change they were making in the immigration policy, even though they were making them. I think that the surge has a real potential of being a very big problem for the president. And my heart is with him on the changes he's making, but my sense of that issue is that he's probably stumbled a bit. He's got good, as the senator mentioned, he's had good approval ratings, 67% and 62%. Although this morning there was that's different ones. So the Real Clear Politics, I think, gave him about a 52% approval rating. But this morning there were a couple that came out that showed that his approval ratings are declining. I think that's part and parcel of this migrant problem and just the number of executive orders in so many different areas that he's issued that are causing people to kind of wonder what's going on. But overall, I understand why he is going so fast, because with the Congress so close in both houses, and particularly the Senate, and the history of what happens in midterm elections, there's a decent chance the Democrats won't control both houses after 2022, if history is true. And so he's got to get done what he needs to get done on his agenda as soon as he can.
So I think it's really important to know that our border is closed. And the only people that are not being turned away at this moment are kids who are unaccompanied minors. And if Joe Biden turned those kids around into the coke crew world of Mexico or wherever they're going to get them back to, they're unaccompanied. They're not with their parents. So here's what I think. There's no question that it is true to say that things have changed and that Joe is moving fast. But here's the deal. We're not going to turn away kids at the border. So what do we do and what are they going to do? First of all, the good news, which I never thought was smart in the beginning, but now I'm happy. FEMA, our Federal Emergency Management Administration, they're included in our Homeland Security. So they're involved with this Border Patrol, and they've been called in now to be able to accommodate these children. The problem we have now is Trump was so cruel that he kept them in these, you know, chain link fence deals. So now we have to fix it. It is true this is a problem. It is true it's going to be hard. But just as we have a surge of these unaccompanied minors, we need a surge of beds at the border. We need a surge of compassion. We need a surge of attorneys to see if these young people can be reunited with a family member here. We need a surge of immigration judges. And I believe that will happen. Will it mean that his approval ratings will go down to 50, whenever, where Trump never got that high? Yeah, but I don't think Joe is looking at polls. He's not running now. He's working. And so it is absolutely true that this is a problem. And it's a big problem, but I feel very good that we're going to achieve what we have to achieve, which is a humane way to treat these unaccompanied children at the border.
Well, it's very clear that immigration is and will remain a challenge, regardless of who is in the White House. It's a topic that has certainly affected many presidents up until now and will certainly do so now that President Biden is in office. But let's look at some other challenges. Let's quickly look at the pandemic, of course, a challenge that has affected everyone on this globe, all across the world. And President Biden has laid out a very ambitious vaccination plan. He has promised that all Americans will be vaccinated by the end of May, by the end of the summer. Senator, how optimistic are you that the U.S. will perform again and enjoy life again at a pre-pandemic state at the timeline that President Biden has set forth?
Listen, I am not a person who is an expert in public health, but I have been listening so intently to Dr. Anthony Fauci, who I know for many years, who led the way on the AIDS epidemic at a time when the pressure was on. And what I love about what's happening in the Biden administration is that they've put the very best people on this. And the best people are working as a special COVID team, headed by Jeffrey Zeitz. And you have an amazing team. Fauci's on it, others are. And they are so honest with the people. They are not hiding the fact that we're not over this yet. However, we are vaccinating at a rate better than, I believe, maybe two countries are better than we are. I think maybe we're talking about Great Britain being ahead of us a little bit and Israel. But outside of that, I think we're next. And we're getting shots in arms at a rate that is better than what Joe Biden promised. He's doing better than he promised. And, you know, the genius of the scientists, I'm so pro-science, I always have been. And the minute this hit, I said to my family, I said, science is going to get us out of this because nothing else will. And we're so to answer your question, you say pre-pandemic levels. I can't give you the magic answer, but Joe Biden said by July, if things go the way they're going now, because we've got to get ahead of this thing. We've got to get ahead of the new variants that are all over, you know, Italy and other places in Europe, et cetera, in the world. And the way to get ahead of it is vaccinate, vaccinate, vaccinate. So you put together the people who are vaccinated, who are your most vulnerable people, and then you add on the people who have the disease, who have some sort of immunity, although the answer is not terribly clear. At this point, if I looked at the numbers correctly, we've got about 25 or 30% of our people who are in a pretty good situation dealing with COVID. We have a long way to go, but it's all hands on deck. I am so proud. And, you know, blue states, red states, everybody's with that program on vaccinations. Last point, there's always hesitancy. What stunned me, the most hesitant group are Republicans. What is that? That has never happened ever, ever, ever. Republicans always, when I was growing up, they were taking the lead and, you know, they were backed by doctors, they were backed by science. And now 46% of Republicans are hesitant. They say they won't get the vaccine. More than 50% of Republican men. So now even this clear public health critical thing, you know, I won't talk about masks. I can't even get into that one. But even this thing, it's got a partisan divide, which is outrageous. And Trump should come out and say, look, I got the vaccine. So did Melania. Come on, guys.
And Fauci has appealed to former President Donald Trump to urge his voters to get the vaccine. Let's see if he will follow and come through on this particular one. But you have mentioned, of course, correctly, Senator, that the US is doing much better on the vaccine front in regards to the rest of the world and Europe in particular, James, which brings me to international relations and foreign policy priorities of the Biden administration. From your point of view, what are the main priorities? What are the main challenges as far as foreign policy is concerned for President Biden?
Well, he has a lot. I think in terms of Europe, his first challenge really, when you think about it, is to reestablish trust and certainty and continuity in the relationship with Europe. And he's going to have to convince a lot of skeptical European leaders that the United States really is back, as he says, and that we are a trustworthy partner and that we do want to work bilaterally or unilaterally, but not unilaterally, multilaterally, I guess is the word I'm looking for, with the European partners. That's going to require, it's a two-way street. It's going to require some things to be done in Europe, such as even before Trump, there was a lot of, as the senator knows, there was a lot of concern in the Congress that Europe, at least certain parts of Europe, European countries were not paying their fair share on the defense side. We're going to need to reestablish good feelings in the G7. NATO has to continue to be an important factor in our dealing, particularly with Russia. And I think Senator Biden, President Biden. I always knew him as a senator, just like Senator Boxer did. So the president will be really believes in multilateralism and working with your partners. But you know, Russia is a huge issue, and there are all sorts of issues there in Europe, like Nord Stream 2 and others. But China is even a bigger issue. And as we talked about earlier, a poll came out today, I believe it was, that something like 57% of the American public believes that China is the biggest foreign policy issue that the president will be facing. So with China, Chinese investment and around the world and in Europe and some other things, I think that's another place that he is really going to need help in dealing with foreign policy issues.
Senator, the majority of our podcast listeners are from Europe. And Germany, perhaps in particular, what does President Biden expect from Europe?
I think he expects them to be very happy that we can get back to normal relationships. Here's the deal. President Biden, like me, we were born during World War II. And the alliances that came after that were so powerful and have lasted so long, and were so threatened by Donald Trump, so threatened, that it really was breaking his heart in a way, because, you know, I watched him when he was the chairman of the Foreign Relations Committee, and later as vice president. There's nothing more that Joe Biden likes than to put his arm on an ally, a friend, and say, we're in this together. This is about democracy. And, you know, the whole world is being threatened by anti-democratic forces. We saw that happen on what happened here recently, and the rise in anti-democratic forces. So how do we make sure that doesn't happen and we don't go through that? The world has been through that. Good Lord. When you have a protester wearing a sweatshirt, as he defaced our capital, and the sweatshirt says Camp Auschwitz, this is not good for our world. And so, you know, Joe sees that, and European leaders see that. So working together to make sure that our people are prosperous, that we have a strong middle class, that our relationships are positive, that we have a good trade policy that helps everybody, all of these things, and that we stand up against hate and we stand up against this kind of violence, wherever it's coming from, you know, the right, the left, wherever, it doesn't matter. We have to speak up. And I think Joe is feeling, and I say Joe with, you know, because he's such a dear friend, President Biden is going to want to get back to normal and face the problems that, you know, the democratic world faces and be part of the solution.
Be part of the solution. Many things that are expected from President Biden, but of course also from Europe, which is a bit of a difficult period right now, trying to maintain and present a unified front, if you will. Senator, James Ziegler has rightly pointed out that despite the preference on the part of or the fact that Joe Biden is known as a transatlanticist, China will most certainly take up most of his time as far as foreign policy challenges are concerned. It is the number one competitive strategic country out there. What advice would you give to President Biden moving forward in U.S.-China relations?
China is going to be number one on the list. I mean, there's no question about it. And, you know, we have an adversarial relationship with China. I think it's fair to say they deserve a lot of the hostility they have now from Congress, as far as the way they treat people, and whether it's Hong Kong or the Uyghurs or other examples I could name. But I think that the world, we're so intertwined, and Jim is better at this than I, because he's really been more looking at the business relationships across all the, you know, all the world, over the world. And so we are intertwined. And I think what President Biden is going to try to do, and this is in his DNA, this is who he is. He's not going to give in on human rights, but he is going to try and find what Jim and I talk about a lot, the sweet spot in legislation or relationships with countries. And I personally believe that sweet spot is climate change. Because China, anyone who's been there, no, I haven't been there in a while, but the last time I was there, we had one day where there's partial sunlight. I mean, it's so difficult there because their pollution, including their carbon pollution, is just, it's just impossible. So I think China sees a win-win in climate. I think they think, you know, that they can create and invent all these new ways to move. But of course, President Biden and the Congress, they're going to want to be toe-to-toe with China going forward on technology. There's going to be a lot of tension here. But again, and I like, you know, years ago, I had a chance to vote to normalize relations with China. And it was very controversial in the Democratic Party at that time. And people said, how can you? They're just awful on human rights and so on and so forth. I voted to normalize relationships. I felt I don't want to see another North Korea. I don't. So that's where I come down. I think that Europe and America are going to have to work together, and our Asian friends, Japan certainly, South Korea, and I could go on and name all the countries, but we're going to have a smart way to deal with China that is fair and just. And we don't give up on our stance for democracy and human rights. At the same time, we don't have such a situation where we can't even talk to them. And then we've got another North Korea on our hands. So that's my 1,000-foot analysis of it.
I agree with the senator. I do believe that President Biden is very much a guy who wants to work with our friends. And in particular, I think he's making a lot of good moves in the Pacific region now with this meeting, of course, that Tony Blinken is having our defense secretary with the foreign minister of China. I think that you have to have dialogue. You can't just not talk to people. But on the other hand, he's also reaching out to South Korea and Japan and Australia and other of our allies, or at least have been allies in the past, in that region. I, up until just a year or so ago, I was on a board in Japan for 11 years, actually a scientific board, Senator. And so I got to know the Japanese very well. I was there at least three times a year. And toward the end of my term there, or on that board, Trump was in office, and I have to tell you that the Japanese attitude toward us had so dramatically changed that they didn't see us as a reliable partner. And when you don't have a reliable partner, and the Koreans, by the way, are feeling the same way about that. Again, I'm on a board of a company that has a big operation in Korea, so I have connections there. When those countries don't feel like we are reliable, they're going to have to do whatever they have to do to deal with the Chinese. And if they can't deal from a position of strength, they're going to have to deal from a position of weakness. And that's not in our best interest. So what Joe Biden is doing, I believe, is absolutely the right thing to do. I just hope he has enough bandwidth and time to get all of this stuff done. But I'm with you, Senator, on that one.
James, you have extensive experience in the world of finance, and many of the IWS members are accomplished businessmen in Germany and beyond. Obviously, both of you have mentioned climate change, both of you have mentioned trade, business relations, all of those which were missing under President Trump to a large degree. Now, President Biden obviously has re-entered the Paris Climate Agreement, entered the WHO, entered the WTO. What are the major challenges as far as the business and trade world is concerned between the US and Europe, James?
Well, I think first we have got to stop what was going on, and that is these threats. For example, Trump was threatening to impose tariffs on automobiles, primarily from Germany, big tariffs. But at the same time, Europe has been pretty tough on our big digital companies in terms of attempting to either regulate them or put tariffs on them, on their products. So I think what we have to do is we got to have a multilateral trade agreement that's actually works for everybody. And I hope the president does that. On the economic front, one of the things that I find a little troubling is that the signs of inflation really have shown up recently, certainly in the 10-year treasury, which is where the kind of the first place you see it. And I'm worried that that if inflation starts, certainly in the United States, it'll go all over the world, and that will really hurt economic growth and that sort of thing. So I think getting good trade agreements right away will help us increase productivity and that sort of thing, which of course, increased productivity always is an antidote to inflation. So. That's sort of just one or two things, but I do believe that our business relationships with Europe are critical. 20% of our investment in the United States, foreign investment in the United States, comes from Europe. And I think it's roughly the same going into Europe from the United States. So we are big partners, whether we like it or not, we're big partners, and partners have got to be, they've got to be honest with each other.
I jump in and say how much I agree with that. I think the increase in productivity is key here. I got my degree in economics a very long time ago, and in years when inflation was so high, and Jim and I think we went through inflationary times where, my God, it was 10, 11% interest you get on a deposit in the bank. I do want to say something though, because I think we've had so many years of no interest rates here. It's hurting a lot of elderly people. They ought to be able to get something, you know? And what I thought was interesting, you know, when the president was being told by many, don't go big, you're going to cause inflation. Janet Yellen and Jerome Powell, and we all know Janet is now the Secretary of Treasury, and Jerome Powell's the head of the Fed. One's a Republican appointed by Trump, and one's Janet is appointed by Joe Biden. She had been at the Fed, but was removed by Trump. They both said, you know what? It may be that we do have 2% inflation. They don't see a runaway, and they feel a little inflation isn't horrifying. But if we don't have this productivity, you're absolutely right. Then it's just, too few dollars chasing too few goods, or too many dollars chasing too few goods. We don't want to get to that stage. So I think that's another reason why we have to work together. We don't want to have out of control inflation, and we don't want to have recession. We got to just get it, like the three bears, just right,
Well, Senator, I agree with you. A little inflation is not a bad thing. The question is how quickly it grows.
Right.
And, if we got to 2.5%, for example, on the 10-year treasury, our mortgage rates would take off in the U.S. because that's where they're set from. And of course, that would really cause the economy to stumble, at least in the housing area. So, that's the thing that we really all need to pay attention to. not right whether it's going, but how fast it's growing.
No doubt. No doubt.
Senator, before we wrap up, obviously you have served alongside Senator Biden for many, many years. You held the seat that now Vice President Kamala Harris then inherited from you. So you know this administration inside and out. And let's look a little bit before we go at the political culture in the United States, because obviously to say that the Trump-Biden election was a crucial one would be a huge understatement. A lot was at stake, and the relief that you felt and still feel is quite palpable throughout even this conversation. But there's no going around the fact that 75 million Americans still voted for Donald Trump, and the divisions are probably still there despite President Biden's win. How concerned are you moving forward that the political divisions, the political atmosphere in the United States, in the US society, will heal and will come together and overcome these differences?
Well, you know, I can't predict everything, but let me give you a few points that might be interesting. First of all, Donald Trump lost. Yes, he got a lot of votes. Joe Biden got a lot more votes. That's not the issue. The issue is very few presidents who are incumbents lose. I mean, very few. And it was, I think for sure, a huge turnout. It was the safest election, most secure election in history, according to the Trump people themselves. It was a mess post-election. It was horrifying to see the insurrection. I mean, we have really gone through it in America. We have gone through a traumatic time. And I'm not one of these people who looks away from trauma. I think you need to look at what happened and look at the hate that was unleashed on people of color and different religions because Donald Trump gave it a wink and a nod and encouraged it, period. People say, well, is he a racist? I'm just saying he was the only president in my lifetime. I can't talk about others. There were a few bad ones in the past, but he was one of the few, he was the only president in my lifetime that wanted to have a searing battle in this nation. He never wanted to expand his base. He never wanted to try and bring people together. He said racist things. He said anti-female things. And he said things against people with disabilities and all of that. The reason I raise it is the fact that he's gone is, you know, I think about 70% of the solution of the mess we're in. The other 30% is there are huge problems out there with people staying in their own little corners and throwing stones instead of sitting down, meeting in the middle and saying, how can we get things accomplished? I think there's going to be a bit of a realignment in our country around the issue of voting rights and democracy. This is now huge. What's happening in the states, and this may be something you're not following because it's complicated, but our states make all the rules for elections. And after this election, they didn't like the fact that Republicans, most of them, not all of them, they didn't like the fact that there was a huge turnout of Black people, a huge turnout of Brown people, a huge turnout of young people. They didn't like it. So instead of doing what other Republican Party leaders have done in the past, and I love them for it, I worked with them, they're not trying to reach out to these folks, they're trying to stop them from voting. So we are in this rough time. Am I optimistic? Yes, because otherwise I wouldn't be on the show. I mean, I would just say to my husband, okay, let's just go travel, forget everything. I'm still involved. I think that most people, when asked, would say they want America to be free of all this tension and this hate. And we're still going to have a hard time, but I think we're on the road.
Senator Boxer, ending on an optimistic note as far as the future of the United States is concerned, as far as the political culture is concerned. James, do you share that optimism?
I do. I think the American people are really at this point ready for some boredom. They are disgusted by all of the stuff that's gone on for the last 4 years. And I think even some of the people who voted for Trump did it because they didn't feel like they had much of a choice, and they held their nose. But they, I know a lot of them that they're glad he's gone. And they believe that there's going to be a time here where, you know, we have to have some people calming down. But we have a history about four times in our country. I've mentioned a couple of them before, where we have really almost come apart, and yet the better angels of our nature prevailed, and the people understood the blessings that we have as Americans. And once they really got to that point and understood they should be grateful for a country like ours, as opposed to hating the country, I think we've seen them come back together. And so I am very optimistic. And like the senator, I've been around a long time. It's been 57 years since I first went to work in the Senate, my first time around there. And I intend to, until they put me in a pine box and put me in the ground, I intend to keep on working to make this a better country for my kids and my grandkids and my great-grandkids.
Senator Boxer and James Ziegler, thank you so much for a very educational, very enlightening, and in the end, uplifting talk on the current state of U.S. politics on the United States under a Biden presidency. Thank you so much.